Yes, hello, this is Danhausen here, very nice for evil, and you are listening to Bob After Dark. Subscribe or be cursed.
From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says everything that goes bump at night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever cape wearing, and forever the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, my brother, my friend, my producer, Count Panic himself.
Oh, hey, Bob, yes, how's it going? Back here, another episode of Bob After Dark.
And an exciting one at that. We are back from a convention that you and I got to do together for a change.
A very rare off-the-heels convention, Nightmare Weekend in the Donald E. Stevens Convention Center in Chicago, Illinois. Bob, it was a fantastic time.
I had a blast. I'm working on the post video right now. The post video, where there's going to be a whole video showing us everything. Wow. Count Panic and I got to interview some celebrities about their belief in ghosts.
Yeah.
There are two really big name people I got a chance to interview as far as the paranormal community that I don't want to spoil yet.
You know, I feel bad because I did play a little song before the show that might have revealed one.
No, I did not get a chance to interview Elvira.
No, you did. Okay, Elvira. No, but you did meet Elvira.
I did get a chance to meet Elvira, and I did get a chance to get a picture with her. Her and our friend Liz.
Elvira.
From AFMG Gaming. She joined me for our photo to meet Elvira, and it was a really good time.
The Elk Ridge boys love Elvira.
I suppose so. So does Bob. Bob Anderson.
Bob does love Elvira, too. It's funny, because she doesn't do the costume anymore, but it's still a privilege to meet Elvira.
Listen.
Yeah.
It is a privilege.
Privilege.
To be even in the vicinity of her.
We are not worthy.
We are not worthy. I stammering to get it out. So... I had a really good time. Thank you for having us, GalaxyCon, who puts on Nightmare Weekend Chicago. This was their first year. Full transparency, Count Panic and I were guests there
for
the press. So it was a lot of fun.
Bob, I tell you, it was a hopping weekend there in Chicago. Only in Chicago could you have a horror convention and a cigar convention back-to-back right next to each other.
Pipe Tobacco. You know, I went to that convention.
You went to that convention,
Bob.
I did.
I had Sunday. I had time to kill, and they had a free ticket on Sunday.
Free cigars.
It was not free cigars. Oh. It was $1 for some pipe tobacco.
Pipes.
It was a good time. I actually had a really big blast at the Chicago Pipe Show. I'm not even lying to you. The community at the Pipe Tobacco Convention was super sweet.
And you met Elvira.
And that same day I got a chance to meet Elvira, I was on panel.
She wasn't at the Pipe Convention.
No, she was not. But we had a good time, Count. We did not.
Yeah.
Yes.
I tell you, I wanted to see more pipes out there with the bubbles coming out of it, but that was not the case there at the Pipe Convention.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But it was a good time, Bob. It was a great time in Chicago.
1,000%.
Gangrel.
I won't spoil anything. Okay. Yeah, Count Panic.
Vampire.
Okay. But thank you again, GalaxyCon, for having us. We had a blast. And welcome to all of our new listeners that might be joining us from the past weekend that might be listening. We networked quite a bit and did a bunch of...
Hooping and hollering.
Yes, a lot of the shaking hands.
Kissing babies.
Kissing babies, as he will. This week is an interesting week, if this is your first time ever listening to Bob After Dark, because we are going against our traditional formula.
Are we?
Yes, usually the show is split up into two parts, the weird spooky news of the week and then the lore of the week.
Oh.
This week we are kind of... We're not doing away with the news of the week, but we're not doing the news of the week this week.
Okay.
And the lore of the week is actually going to be more of a biography, because recently in the paranormal community, we lost somebody that is incredibly important to the community, Joe Nickel, from the opposite point of view, though, in the paranormal. Joe was a skeptic. But loved everything about what he did, investigations and stuff. But his job was to go in and try to explain hauntings. Now, I, as you guys may know, I might not be a skeptic, but I appreciate skepticism on a grand scale. I believe it keeps me on my toes, and I have some of the most lovely people in my life are skeptics, including our guest tonight, which I will let Count Panic do the introductions.
Yeah, I think we got Pat here. Pat, it's been a while since I checked the Zoom link, so Pat, are you there?
Yes, I am here.
From the Ghostly Podcast. Hey, Pat, yes. How about that? And he's loud and clear. Bob, that's a great microphone Pat has.
Pat, well, Pat's, Pat's a professional.
Yeah, we need a good better microphone. Yes. Set, Bob.
Pat's got the sweetest beard I have
seen. He does. Look at that right there.
Yes, and he's lost a ton of weight. Look at him go.
He does.
Pat, oh, you will look incredible.
Thank you. Thank you, man.
You should feel proud of yourself.
I mean, I will once the journey is over, you know? I'm still in the midst of it, so it's hard.
Well, I'm proud of you, and I know Count Panic's proud of you.
Yeah.
And you know, in case you guys don't know who Pat from Ghostly Podcast is, my answer would be, where have you been? But we might have some new listeners who might not know who you are. So, Pat, would you like to give us an idea of who you are?
Yes, I am the friendly neighborhood skeptic from Ghostly Podcast. Ghostly is a podcast where we debate ghost stories. So I give like the history, and it's called the Pat Facts. I think, Bob, I think you were the one that named it.
Yeah, I was. Yeah.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, and we then go over some evidence, and I try to debunk it all, much like Joe Nickel did. Probably not as good as him. He was phenomenal.
Yeah, 100%. Now, but Pat and I believe Joe have something in common. There are certain skeptics who are very hardcore. There are skeptics out there who are so hardcore as what we call the unfiltered skeptic, which I don't think they could find fun in the paranormal at all. But I think you and Joe Nickel have something in common where you enjoy the paranormal, you just don't believe it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I thoroughly enjoy it. In fact, there was a time I was a believer. I was hashtag true believer at one point. Just events in my life have changed me, so no longer that. But I still appreciate a great ghost story. And, you know, on Ghostly, I have to debunk everything or try to, although Joe Nickel didn't like the term debunk. I have to try to do my best. We let the listener vote on if it's real or not. But I don't do that on the street. You know, if you come up to me and tell me a ghost story, I'm going to be interested and we're going to talk about it. And I'm not going to try to tell you that you're wrong. So that's probably a little bit of a difference there. I was looking over, what Joe Nickel said to, Ed Warren. And that was an amazing, interview that they did.
Would you like to talk about that?
I
think that's a good place to start.
Yeah, so it was on the Sally Jesse Raphael show. That was way before your time.
I'm familiar with who the show was.
Bob was a baby.
I was. My mother used to rock the glasses, so we.
Oh, the red glasses. Mm-hmm. She was famous for that.
Yes.
So they had the Warrens on, and I love the Warren stories. I have a tough time with the Warrens, so this really spoke to me. I'll just give you a little bit of what he said. He said, I've investigated haunted houses for some 20 years. I've not met a house that I thought was haunted. I think the Warrens have not met a house that they didn't think was haunted. The houses that sincere people report they think are haunted usually follow a certain pattern. The hodgepodge of the sort of ghost tale, poltergeist, part demon, part this, part that. We saw a similar pattern with the Amityville horror. A case that the Warrens thought was genuine. It turned out to be a blatant hoax done over a bottle of wine or several bottles of wine. I love that. I love that he would say that. And then Ed Warren actually lashed out at him after that and threatened him physically.
You know, and in all fairness, I get why Ed was protecting his brand and getting where he comes from, but I would argue that's a very respectful way to say that you don't agree with somebody.
I think so. I thought it was very, very clever. It was kind of in your face, kind of like a, you know, like a Richard Dawkins kind of thing, sure. Like an atheist kind of thing. It was kind of in the face, which I would have probably toned that down a little bit. But still, I mean, if I had the chance to talk to Ed Warren right now, although that's not going to happen because he's passed as well, I don't think I would have the kindest words to say to him either.
Wow.
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 Pat, tell us how you really feel.
Well, it's just, you know, I don't believe in trickery, and I don't believe in trying to convince people so that you can gain their money. If it doesn't have anything to do with money, if it's just a good story and you want to tell it, I have no problem with someone believing it. I just, when money's involved, that's when it becomes personal to me.
Sure, sure.
Ed Warren was all about the money.
He was, definitely.
Yeah, he was a businessman. People ask me my opinion on the Warren situation quite often, and I, from a believer standpoint, I believe Lorraine was really gifted, and I believe that Ed was just a very good businessman, and he knew how to market his wife very well.
Well, Andy was a demonologist, too. Let's not...
No, there's no argument there. Absolutely not. He knew how to market himself. He knew how to market his wife. He did study the paranormal.
Yeah.
I have had conversations with some of the world's leading experts in the paranormal who have not said very nice things, but I respect their work, but that's beside the point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Other than that lovely quote, which I think sets the foundation for what we're walking into, let me read you guys Joe Nichols' autobiography really quick on his website. This is joenichol.com. It is still up to this day. I'm going to be reading word for word about the person himself. I've been called the modern Sherlock Holmes, the real-life Scully from X-Files, and other appellations. I am well into my fourth decade as an investigator of the historical, paranormal, and forensic mysteries, myths, and hoaxes. In contrast to my mystery mongers on the one hand and so-called debunkers on the other, I believe that mysteries should be investigated with a view towards solving them. Apparently, I am the world's only full-time paranormal investigator, which... Side note, isn't true. A lot of people do that full time. Not a lot, but there are people who do it full time. The investigative files writer for Skeptical Inquirer, science magazine, who travels around the world investigating strange mysteries at the very fringes of science. The role utilizes my varied background: former stage magician, registered magician at the Houdini Hall of Fame, private investigator for world's most famous detective agency. Has a PhD in English focusing on literary investigation and folklore, and author of 24 books. A major role examiner in question rare documents. I have exposed many forgeries, including the notorious Jack the Ripper diary. I have authenticated many treasures. My book on the subject include Pen, Ink, and Evidence, the Detecting Forgery. And those are just some of my notes. Like everyone, I have done many different things, and I have pushed the envelope. I have made something of a career out of careers: blackjack dealer, riverboat manager, poet, sign painter. Scores are listed at the site under personas, which if you get a chance to check out his website, I highly recommend, because he's very tongue-in-cheek about his career. And this seems like the type of person where if I was aware of his existence, I probably would have reached out for an interview, because he seemed like a really interesting guy. Even in this regard, I have been a detective, and for its many ways, an interesting life. So that's who we're talking about today, is Joe Nichol. And this evening, we're going to be looking at a couple different cases that Joe Nichol has worked on. And Pat's here because resident skeptic. And I
hope to do it justice, at least, you know, because I mean, he was brilliant. I you know, diving into his stuff, he's just a brilliant, brilliant man, you know.
So a couple of his most infamous stories, and probably what he's known for the most, is his work with the Shroud of Turin. You know, you're familiar with that, correct, Pat?
Oh, yes. I've studied it since high school, actually. I have a lot of interest in the Shroud of Turin.
Now catch people up to speed, Bob. But the Shroud of Turin, from Jesus, when he was off the cross there.
Yes, yeah. I was going to actually ask Pat to fill us in.
Yeah, yeah.
Pat's our guest.
So, fill us in.
So supposedly when Jesus was crucified, which there is evidence that there was a man named Jesus and he was crucified on the cross, and that he was crucified in such a way. So that I'm not going to debate at this moment. They said that they took him, and when they buried him in this, like the shroud is a burial shroud. So it's like a sheet, you know, that you would put on your bed, and they would put it over the body and tuck it in. And supposedly what happened is during the resurrection, that there was some kind of radiation or electrical discharge or even ultraviolet radiation. I've heard all the different opinions about that, and it left an imprint on this shroud. Interesting enough, when you look at it really close up, if you're like right up on it, you can't see the image very well. You have to be about 8 feet away from it to really see it. And it looks like the Jesus that, and I hate to say this, but all white people have known, our whole lives. It looks like the white Jesus, which might not have been the actual Jesus, people are saying. So that's one piece of evidence against it. But it looks just like him. And there's also, because Jesus was crucified and he had a crown of thorns on, there's also evidence that there was a crown of thorns. And by the way, they did an analysis of the blood type, and it would have been AB positive, which is one of the rarest blood types. It's the second rarest. I think it's one out of 165 people. So the Shroud of Turin is a very interesting artifact, a relic, as they would say, and it's currently owned by the Catholic Church. So we say this as the cardinals are going into conclave and going to do a vote, I think, today or tomorrow.
Soon,
was their
right?
first
yeah.
vote.
Yes.
Soon. The Shroud, always fascinating, Bob, to me. I mean, there's been so many shows and documentaries on it, but, you know, at the end of the day, you really can't disprove. And I know Pat's the skeptic as well. I mean, it's hard to disprove that image in the Shroud there, Bob.
So according to the Skeptical Inquirer, which, Pat, do you subscribe to the Skeptical Inquirer?
I mean, yeah, of course. Who doesn't?
Do you really?
No, I don't. But I should.
You should. I was going to say, they probably ask you to do it. Oh, we have a caller.
We have a call if you want to take it live, Bob.
We'll take it live.
We'll take it live there, Bob.
Oh, hey there, Bob and Count.
Hey.
Oh, hey there, John. How are you? Nice for you to call in.
Yeah, how are you today?
Doing good. It's good to be back in the studio. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm okay. Here's Pat over there. I heard him call a numerous amount of times, but I never knew he was a skeptic. I always thought he was...
I kind of hide it well, John.
Well, you know what? I'm listening to you. I maybe I didn't catch it. I don't know. But I mean, I always thought you was you were one of Bob's, counterparts.
Yeah.
So you so it is good. You know, always, it's like political views. You know, there's always opposites. So you just brought up about, religion. So are you kind of a skeptic in everything or just paranormal activity?
No, actually.
Sounds like you're
a skeptic
in every aspect.
No, I'm not. I actually believe in UFOs. And Joe Nickel has a very interesting case about UFOs that he believes people are like fantasy prone, the people that say that they've had a encounter, which I don't know if I agree with, but I don't have to agree with everything that the man said. I do believe in UFOs. I do not believe in anything metaphysical though, or anything that you would consider like paranormal or supernatural.
So what about like space? I mean, do you believe there's planets, outer space, the Mars, people living maybe on a different planet? Or because we hear a lot about that. I mean, you know, do you believe we went to the moon? I mean, are you how far? How far of a skeptic are you? You know, I mean,
I've never been asked that. I do believe that we landed on the moon.
Okay,
I am a skeptic, but I don't go that far. I mean, I believe in the most logical answer, typically. And so logically,
do you have a lot of debate? Do you have a lot of debates with maybe people that are skeptic towards your views? Or?
Oh yeah, there's one in particular.
Right, because
that comes
I mean, there's two sides of a story. I mean, there's a am I right or am I wrong?
You are right. Yeah, you are right. I am not like a hardcore skeptic. I am more soft. I'm more interested in finding the truth. So if for some reason, and this would take a lot, and this has been talked about on the show, but I would believe if it came down to actual facts proving to me that there is a ghost, I would have no choice but to believe. I would drop everything that I think, and I would believe.
So did you go on any paranormal investigations before with Bob or anybody or no?
Yes. Bob, so I don't think I've done one with you, have I?
No, Pat, you and I have never done an investigation together. You and I have been in the same room with equipment together, but never not a full-blown investigation, no.
Yeah, so I've done a couple.
If you did go on one, you said, let's say, you know, whoever you're with, let's say you're with Bob, okay, there's something in a room. So you're there. I mean, so either you believe it, there's something there, or you don't. I mean, so where would you stand if you were hit with him on a investigation?
So if we saw an actual, and I love that the term that they use, disembodied being. It's always disembodied. It's not bodiless. It's disembodied.
It's
so,
a
yeah,
better
if we
word,
saw
Pat.
One, yeah, yeah. If we saw one, I would have no choice but to believe. And it would change a lot of things about my life currently. I am a Buddhist, so I lean more atheist than anything else. That would change that. I don't think I could be an atheist anymore then either. So it would change a lot about me, John. That's an interesting question.
Well, he got me going now, Bob. I really like it. We could spend 8 hours. I could spend 8 hours talking with him just to pick his brain.
We'll have to have an 8 hour show.
We'll have to have an 8 hour show. John, in 8 hours, so, I'll be just waking
you know,
back
but,
up.
Hey, that's good that, you know, you're the opposite, so to speak, or whatever. But, I don't know that part of you, but hey, you know, that's interesting. And, you know, you got to have, I guess, two sides of the story. And, you know, if everybody was with the same thing, then it wouldn't be interesting, I guess, right?
You are one.
Yeah, and I will tell you that the paranormal community has welcomed me with open arms. They love that I'm a skeptic because they want to be the one to prove to me that there is something out there. Bob has tried. Other people have tried that have been on this show. People that haven't been on this show have tried. It just never has happened. I always have a reason for it because, as I said, I look for the most logical reason, and ghosts are hardly ever the most logical reason.
So do you think there ever going to come the time where you're going to be a believer, whether it's in the paranormal or it's going to be the religious aspect of things? Or are you that hard of a, you know, I mean, I don't know what the word is, that, you know, a miracle is going to have to take place in front of you in order for you to believe. Is that correct?
Yeah,
or?
For believers, it would seem like that for me. But to me, I'm very specifically would want something that can be replicated, and that is physical evidence.
Like the Shroud of Turin there.
The Shroud of Turin comes super close, but I will tell you that there is some holes in that, but literally and figuratively. I am open to the idea. It just would take a lot because there's actual reasons why I'm a skeptic that probably wouldn't be best to get into in this show because it would take the show. So
2 hours.
Well, maybe Bob and you and the Conker take him to the cheese factory in Wisconsin there, and, you know, maybe he'll be a believer of cheese.
We'll do an episode of the cheese factory.
Yeah. I mean, if I could have some cheese curds, that would lean me in the right direction.
Yeah, well, I figure cheese is always the answer, but yeah, I'll continue to listen to the show, and you know, I appreciate you being on. So, you guys,
thanks
have
for
a
calling,
good evening.
John.
Thanks for calling, John. We appreciate it.
See ya.
Now, Pat, I want to point out that you and I have had We've never really – we had another –
Well, no,
another
I was going to say, Bob, I know John kind of brought it up. If you want to get into the moon landing, Chuck Pullen is on the – we can get Chuck Pullen on the line right now.
Oh, God.
And have a moon landing debate right now,
no,
Pat.
No, we're –
Pat, Joe, it's up to you.
Joe Nickel. Joe Nickel is a –
Okay.
Joe Nickel is rolling in his
– I know, but I know Chuck is chomping at the bit to talk about the moon landing.
We are not going – Buzz Aldrin's going to show up here and try to fight me, which legitimately Buzz Aldrin punched somebody. Did we lose Pat?
No, we're good right
no,
there,
I'm
Bob.
Okay,
here.
Good, no.
I'm just saying he loves moon landing debates.
But what I was going to say is Pat and I have had these discussions a lot lately, and Pat, you are open to the idea of having your mind changed. You
yes.
want to believe.
And you know what? That goes for everything in my life, not just – skepticism, not just this, it's any belief that I have. It could be political, it could be whatever you could think of. It could be Diet Coke versus Diet Pepsi, which that would take a lot for me to switch.
Were you Diet Coke guy?
I'm a Diet Coke guy. Yeah,
because
he
picks
Indiana
the correct answer.
People.
Yeah. He because that's the correct answer, Pat. We'll agree on
but
that.
But I do like crunchy peanut butter sometimes.
Because you're a monster. But so before we get more skeptics on the line or more believers on the line ready to come at Pat with hot oil, Pat is not the unfiltered skeptic. He's very skeptic light, where he's a skeptic, but he's gentle about it. And there's only a few times that Pat's ever called me out on some nonsense about just being ridiculous. And that would have been the praying mantis man.
Yes, yes. Okay, Bob. So as far as praying mantis man in the overalls, I mean, like on a scale from 1 to 10, how much do you believe in
10.
Him? I'm putting you on the spot. 10? You believe in him a 10? Is it because of the overalls?
Can we get back to the shroud now, please?
Yeah, we can, yeah.
He has overalls? Well,
okay, back to the shroud. All right, so according to the Skeptical Inquirer, when the cloth was first discovered in Lyrie, France, in the middle of the 14th century, its owner could not or would not explain how he acquired the holy relic in Christendom.
That's red flag number one right there.
Yes.
Yeah.
In 1389, a bishop reported to Pope Clement VII that it had been used in faith healing scam in which persons were hired to fake illness. Then, when the cloth was revealed to them, pretend they've been healed so that the money might cunningly be wrung from unsuspecting pilgrims. Eventually, he said, after delight, inquiry, and examination, the, and I quote, fraud was uncovered. The cloth had been cunningly painted, and the truth being attested by the artist who painted it. And it was painted by some guy named Diarchus in 1389. Or 1389.
Oh, yeah, he's a friend of mine, yeah.
Oh, you guys go way back.
Yeah, way, way, way back, yeah.
The sordid origin of the supposedly sacred relic collaborated with much evidence. According to Jewish burial practices, Jesus' body would have been washed and covered in burial spices, and the body wound in multiple clothes of plain linen. In contrast, the Shroud of Turin depicts an unwashed body without myrrh and aloes, and is a single cloth woven in a herringbone pattern. A medieval, but not a first century weave, and shows the different, like, under and over draping style. Moreover, there is no history of this cloth. There have been some 40 true shrouds prior to its appearance in France, and the image's elongated form of those French Gothic artists of that time. Iconographic elements also date the image to the Middle Ages. The radiocarbon date obtained by three laboratories was between 1260 and 1390, and consistent about right around circa 1355, where the hoax and forger's confession. This is what is called a collaborative evidence, and there is more.
Yeah, and I will tell you that there's some recent evidence that has come out, too, that supports the Shroud of Turin as well. So recently... This has been in the like Catholic news for a while now, that they that there was a cloth that they would have used to wipe down Jesus's head, because no blood could touch the Shroud of Turin, even though it had blood on it, because they did the AB positive blood type. Anyways, so they wiped down his head, and I guess supposedly, if you hold it up to the Shroud of Turin, it matches that image exactly. All the points match precisely where they should line up. So whoever, if it's made, that person made this other thing as well. That is just come to light now.
Wow. This stuff fascinates me, Bob, I tell you. I mean, learning about history and whatnot, and, you know, I know there was a few things years ago where there was images coming out of of what Jesus could have looked like and whatnot. I mean, I know with the DNA and everything, we don't know for sure, but, Bob, it's fascinating to me.
Well, this is not what they would have come up with.
This was a different one. Yeah. Right.
This is white guy Jesus.
This is the lighter complexion Jesus.
Yeah, exactly.
But there was like one the blonde you know, hair years or the brown ago. Hair. It was like you know what? Maybe Jesus could have more so looked like, and that was just a fascinating as well. So, Bob, we're living in a crazy time of technology, if you ask me.
Yes, you aren't kidding there, Kyle Panic, and nothing wrong with a little slight debate on what it is, but you know. Jesus
what
was
are
from
your
the,
thoughts, Bob?
On the shroud? The shroud?
Yeah.
Remember, I was born and raised Catholic, so I have some kind of belief there.
Polish Catholic.
Polish Catholic at that. We need another Polish Pope, man.
What's the betting odds here?
I want the pizza guy to
the,
be
the pizza guy?
Pope. Yeah. Yeah. He's got pizza. He's got pizza in his name. Pizzarelli or
Pizzarelli?
Something like that.
Vote for the pizza guy.
Are we taking bets on who becomes Pope next?
I'm sure there is a Vegas tip Vegas tip board right now going on who's going to be the Pope.
Yeah.
I believe that it is interesting. I believe that every relic is exactly what they say it is? Probably not. Do I believe that the shroud is exactly what the healing properties that they say it is? Hard to say. I understand that there is still evidence out there that say that, you know, if this person created one, then they had to have created another, like Patrick just decided to tell us, which I didn't know about, which is fascinating.
Yeah.
You know,
well, but also too, so Joe Nickel was actually able to recreate the Shroud of Turin, which nobody had ever been able to do. They tried a bunch of different ways to do it. Well, he used this thing called bas relief, which is a painting technique, and he was able to do a credible version of the Shroud of Turin. But so they said that the proportions were off because they were using this Gothic standard that they had back in the day. Well, it was off on this this towel that was used for his head too. So, I mean, unless he was a different proportion than the rest of human beings, it seems not plausible. I will say that they did do the carbon dating, and it came up to be, you were exactly right about the years. I was leaning more towards 1400s, but you're right about the years. I know that they said that a part of it was replaced at one point, and that was probably around the 1400s that part was replaced and that they took that. And they've done other testing. So it really, this one is more just whatever you want to believe, because they're not going to prove without a shadow of a doubt that it is fake. Although Joe came close with his recreation of it. They're never going to prove it. So it's going to be whatever your faith is.
Yeah. And I would agree with you on that. You know, no question about that. I'm not here to tell people that their faith is wrong. That is never my job here on Bob After Dark. And everybody knows that. I welcome everybody from all walks of life. Strong belief that if as long as you're not hurting anybody, then we're all on the same page.
Yeah.
However, if these articles are true from what the Skeptical Inquirer writes, that they were having people fake their illnesses in order to charge people more money in order to get healed by the cloth. Now that is a problem.
Yeah.
That's where I draw the line. If
me too,
if so let's say the Catholic Church had the shroud right now, which they do, apparently, correct?
They do, yes.
They do. Now, if they decided to take this on a tour across the world and wrap people up in it, or at least have people a chance to touch it, that should be considered a free thing. That is the healing cloth from Christ himself, you know what I'm saying? But now, you know, if they decided to come out and do this and they were charging, let's say, $100 a touch, now I'm going to look at them, kind of tap my foot and be like, well, yeah. Come on now, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you on that. Although I will say that if they allowed multiple people to touch this thing, it wouldn't last very long. So it would be its farewell tour then.
Oh no. I get what you're coming from. I'm just saying in general, if the church was to do it and they were opening it up for people to touch or whatever it might be, let's say this is in perfect condition in a perfect world.
Yeah.
But if you're starting to charge people about it and you're having people fake their sicknesses in order to be, and I quote, healed, that's where I draw the line. It's the same thing where I draw the line on any kind of fake psychic where people clamor to the fact that somebody can foolproofly contact the dead 100% and they charge people upwards of $1,000 to do a seance. That's, you're playing on people's emotions, and that's not okay.
Or people that have TV shows that always seem to find ghosts everywhere that they go, even though they hire shadow people that are just people dressed in black suits.
That's oddly specific, Patrick.
Yeah, actually, someone that we both know might have been in one of those things. He might have played John Wayne Gacy.
Oh,
yes. I think you know where I'm going with that.
I know where you're going. That's why I'm laughing.
So is Pat saying that all ghost shows are believable?
Pat is saying that in this one particular show that we know that was their evidence was faked.
Hmm. Yeah.
We know that for a fact, and that's all we're going to say.
Okay. I'll leave it at that.
So there are two more cases I wanted to look at other than the shroud. Yeah. And the next one I wanted to look at was Joe Nichols' time working in the McKenzie House in Toronto, Ontario.
Oh my God. This is literally the best story ever. I mean, this one to me goes down as like the top debunking of all times.
So according to How Stuff Works, which I know that website sounds funny to say out loud, but they have incredible articles about the paranormal on there. I'm not even joking with you.
Yeah. And by the way, they have a really great podcast too.
They do. So I'm not screwing around here. It's not like a WikiHow. But it's they do have some really great articles. This one's written by Ed Grabinowski, Grabinowski. So in 1972, Joe Nichol conducted his first investigation of a haunted house. The caretaker of an old inn called the McKenzie House in Toronto, Ontario, reported heavy footsteps on a stairwell late at night, mysterious piano music, and an apparition that appeared to be to his wife while, sorry guys, I'm jumbling my words here real bad, that had appeared to his wife while laying in bed one night. Finally, a photograph of a piano had unexplained white blur in the foreground. After interviewing all the employees, Nichol found one tour guide who had reported hearing the footsteps during the day as well. Examining the staircase, Nichol found that it ran along an outside wall. Heading outside, he found that another old building sharing that wall, and a quick interview with the caretaker of the building revealed a stairwell running parallel to the one in the McKenzie house, but on the other side of the wall. A late night cleaning crew explained the footsteps that night, and the wife of the house's caretaker playing the piano, unexplained mysterious piano music. But what about the photo and the apparition? Analysis of the photo, professional photographer revealed that a bright flash had been used. A white sheet music on the piano threw a reflection off the flash into the foreground, creating a strange blur. Experiencing an apparition while in bed is actually a common experience, known as a waking dream or hypogonic trance. The witness may awake to find their body utterly paralyzed. People in a waking dream also frequently perceive one or more of these figures moving around in them. The underlying psychological and physiological causes of these traces are not as well understood, but they have been well documented by many subjects. In the end, Nickel concluded that the house was not, in fact, haunted.
Yeah, I mean, that is like the holy grail of debunkings right there. I don't know how you can do more. You know, that is classic.
So you want to talk a little bit about what you know about the case, Pat?
I mean, I know exactly what you just said. I know that the person was really freaked out. And so here's my thing, too. I never want to call someone a liar. You know, I don't think that they purposely went about trying to lie. I believe that they believed every single thing that happened in this particular case. I just, you know, it just makes perfect sense, right? There is somebody walking up and down the stairs next to it. That's why you would hear footsteps. There is the wife playing piano. That's why you hear the piano music. There is a picture that's overexposed with a flash in it, which happens a lot, and that would explain the white spot in the photo. And then the other part of it is the only part that you can kind of debate, but it is kind of this is something that I know sleep experts have studied, is sleep paralysis. It's definitely it torments a lot of people. I know someone, and we've done a show on sleep paralysis. She really believes that it is some kind of demon that, that comes to her. But there is this thing that happens when people are half asleep and half awake. That state of mind is really weird. That's why they tell you not to wake up people when they're sleepwalking, is because that state of mind is so fragile. It can hurt so many different things. And so this is the same kind of theory behind it. It makes perfect sense to me. I that would be the one part I'm open to listening to others' reasoning about.
Absolutely. Count, what did you think of that one?
Yeah, you know what, Bob? I mean, again, skeptically, I tend to believe I'm on the believer side of things, but Pat being on here kind of has me second guessing a couple of things here. But you know, with that,
well, I wish that worked on my show.
It doesn't go on too much over there, does it?
You know, we're getting to a point where the skeptics are probably the same amount as the believers.
There
so
you
our
go.
Votes are getting closer to 50-50 now.
But I think this is healthy, Bob. I think it's great having Pat on and kind of debating things a little bit here.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, there wasn't a single skeptic I would have rather had on instead of Pat for this episode.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
Well, you're my podcast Yoda, Pat.
Man, I haven't been on your show in like 2 years, I think.
It's been a while.
And I'm so appreciative to be back.
And you could just do the show from Zoom. Isn't that comfy?
It is, but I, you know, one day I want to go back in the studio.
We have a couch waiting.
Couch
we have, here, we have a new couch.
Let me try to, I know Pat can't see it, but
we have a new couch on the studio that's empty right now, Pat.
I've seen pictures of it. I want you to do like a Johnny Carson, which again, that's way before your time, Johnny Carson interview with me being on the couch.
I know who Johnny Carson is. I'm aware of the
You can do
the
Jay Leno.
The Jay Leno or the David Letterman.
How about Jimmy Kimmel?
Jimmy Kimmel. Oh, see, I know who you're referring to, Patrick. I'm not.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm just, you know, trying to not come into it assuming that you know anything. So that is my job.
So my question to you guys about the McKenzie house is, even though Joe Nickel has stepped in and has essentially pretty much debunked the whole thing, you could still go online to this day, and there are people that clamor that the house is as haunted as could be, even though it was heavily, heavily debunked. Why do you guys believe that's a thing?
Here is my question to you then. You believe in the Amityville horror house, right?
I believe there is something there that on a very low end kind of a thing, and I think it was really blown out of proportion. And I believe that there was a media frenzy to cause people to act a certain way. That's my belief on Amityville.
Sure. I mean, that has been debunked as well. And I mean, Joe did it right on the Sally Jesse Raphael show. I mean, there's going to be believers, and that's okay. I just don't want people to waste their money and too much energy in that. I mean, believe it, have fun with it, buy the t-shirts, I don't care. But, I mean, don't give money to people that just tell you these stories, because I'm sorry, unfortunately, I have not seen anything that proves any existence to me yet, and I'm still looking. You know, on Ghostly, we don't shy away from topics because this is too believable. In fact, we do the opposite. Rebecca has been picking the topics. She's my co-host. She's the believer. She picks the topics, and if something is too skeptical, she will not do an episode on it, no matter how much I beg to do it. She will not, because I want to win a couple, you know.
Why not?
I want to look good.
Well, Pat, I think you could win the McKenzie House. You guys have done an episode on the McKenzie House, right?
I don't believe we have. No,
so that might sound like the next episode. I'm throwing down the gauntlet for you guys to do.
All right, coming up next.
So your next episode of Ghostly, if you guys haven't already picked it out, the McKenzie House in Toronto, I would love to see you guys do the episode about it, and you bring Joe Nichols' findings to Rebecca.
Well, you got to be on it then, too.
I would love that. That makes me being invited on Ghostly is an honor and a blessing, let me tell you.
And how about this? Panic, you've never been on Ghostly. I want you on there.
I've never been on, Pat. This is an honor. Am I officially invited?
You are officially invited.
Oh, Pat, let's set up. You got to set my own Zoom camera up there, Bob. We got to figure it out.
We'll have to figure it out.
We'll have to figure it out.
But the McKenzie House, and like I said, if you go online to this day, the tourism board even proclaims it as the most haunted location in all of Ontario.
Yeah.
But here we are. The reason you're hearing disembodied piano music, which I'm using disembodied piano music on purpose just to make Pat giggle a little bit.
Disembodied.
Yeah. I don't know, between that and microclimates and the lady in white, I think I've nailed down your top three favorite tropes.
Yeah, you did. Orbs, you know, you got to throw in some orbs there too.
I had I'm not going to say who yet because I don't want to spoil, but I had a chance to interview a very prominent figure in the paranormal world over the weekend. And I got a chance to ask him what his favorite ghost story trope was. Yeah. And his answer to me was lady in white, because they never seem to stop existing.
was this someone with the initials ZB?
No, he was not at the convention.
He missed that one?
He missed it. It's very unfortunate. Yeah. I don't think...
I would love Bob to ask him a question.
I don't think ZB would let me in the same room as him. I think I think he would have private security there with a photo.
I think he would, but he would have some kind of weird gas mask on when he does that, though, because he likes to do that during paranormal investigations for some reason.
He has lung issues, Pat.
Okay, yeah, but, I mean, most of these places are totally fine. I've been in them. I'm fine.
Yeah, you know, Pat could do it. He could do it.
Yeah, exactly.
But maybe his lungs are special. His lungs are special, Pat.
Well, I mean, I can get into a lot of things about my lungs, but I'm not.
So the final thing what we're going to talk about tonight is something that I've never covered on the show because it's a true crime story. But yes, as you guys know, true crime falls into the same bowling league as all of us. Pat and Rebecca did a really good episode on it, and I will have that linked in the show notes below for you guys to go to check out, is the concept of Jack the Ripper. And Joe Nichol actually was one of the people who more or less debunked one of the first real big mysteries of who it could have been.
Yeah, absolutely he did. And I love his technique in this. This is going a little bit more science-y than I typically go, but it definitely... the lengths that he goes to, that's amazing.
So, Pat, for our kids at home, who is Jack the Ripper?
Oh, Jack the Ripper. And he wasn't on Three's Company.
I thought it was.
So Jack the Ripper was a killer in England in around the 1888s. There's been numerous reports on who it was. Even some people believe And they might still believe, although it's been kind of debunked, that it could have been H.H. Holmes, the first Chicago serial killer, and part of the Devil in the White City book, that they're going to supposedly make a movie. They've been saying that for like 20 years now, but supposedly they're going to make that movie. He would kill people in such a fashion that he must have been a surgeon, and he was very, very skillful in his disembodying people. It was a terror, and they've never truly identified who it was.
But Joe Nickel was able to prove who it was not.
Yeah.
You want to talk a little bit about that, Pat?
Yeah. So there is a person named, sorry, I'm trying to pull it up because I don't remember the exact name of the person. There was a diary that was made. So a lot of people believe it was a guy by the last name of Maybrix. And his wife actually poisoned him and was convicted of that crime. So they believe that she poisoned him because he was this murderer. It turns out that they were pointing more to his brother, that wrote in a diary all about his killings. This diary is, it was very weird. Like the first 20 pages were totally ripped out of it for whatever reason. I don't know. Maybe he gave them out as souvenirs or something. I don't know. But Joe Nickel did this thing where he actually had it investigated, and he had the ink looked at to see if it contained TLC, which is actually thin layer chromatography. And that would date it to a particular point. Well, that kind of came back, and it said that it didn't find any of that in there. So it couldn't, it wasn't during the Victorian period. Several tests were carried out to find out whether the ink contained that particular chemical, a preservative, in an effort to definitively date the ink. And according to one source, the chemical was introduced into the Merck Index in 1857. So that's when they believe it came out, but not used commercially in ink until 1972. And so them discovering this particular element in there kind of puts it right in Joe Nickel's time there too, in 1972. That's when he did the McKenzie House as well. And so the chemical was there. I mean, it was around, but it was not used in ink. But all of a sudden it was used in this ink. And also too, the writing style was not common for that day. And whoever Jack the Ripper was a very well-educated man. He would have wrote in a certain manner. And this was not that manner. It was definitely ahead of its time. So it's a very interesting case. I don't know if I would have went through those lengths. I mean, I have ghostly money, so pretty much I could buy a sandwich at any given time. That's about it.
So, in essence, folks, is even though on my show we celebrate things that are paranormal, sometimes it's important to look at things from the other side of the table. And Joe Nickel's life, especially in our realm, should be celebrated. I don't believe that it should be a skeptic versus believer argument, because a lot of people will take it to that point, and I don't think that's very fair. I think it's important to have a healthy dose of each for there to be an actual logical conversation versus an overzealous believer or an unfiltered skeptic. I feel like those two ideologies really bounce against each other. But somebody like Pat and myself could sit down and have a great conversation. And I love and adore Pat's belief system 100%. In fact, there's been several times that Pat has convinced me to be a skeptic in some cases.
One day you're going to enter the world of skepticism.
Patrick, I have had experiences that I cannot explain that you cannot skepticize away from me.
I mean, to tell you the truth, I have too, but I do explain them away though.
Wow.
Because I have to. So, If we have just a second, the reason why I'm a skeptic is because my parents died when I was very young and I struggled with grief. I could not get over the fact that they died, and it messed up relationships and my whole entire life. And one day I found Buddhism and it was the answer. It meant letting go of everything, letting go of those beliefs. That's the only thing that I found to help me with the grief that I had. I'd been to psychiatrist. I've tried the 5 stages of grief. I've tried all those things. None of it works. I couldn't get to the anger part because how could you be angry at your parents that have passed? You know, it's like crazy. So, I mean, I am for a reason a skeptic. But as I said, if evidence presents itself right in front of me, I have to believe it. I vow that for everything in my life.
That's a good vow.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we should all be that way. And actually, there shouldn't be skeptics and believers in the paranormal world. There should be a mixture of both. Everybody should have a bit of skepticism and a bit of believer in them. When I first hear a story, I am probably more of a believer than most people. But then I sit down and I think about it in a logical way, and then I poke holes at it. So
unless it's the praying mantis case, in which case...
No, that one was just... Yeah. That one, immediately when I heard it, you know, it was the overalls.
You were... Be careful. We're on AM radio, Pat. Don't say anything you regret.
I'm sorry, I'm just laughing because I'll never forget when I shared that case with Pat and the look on his face.
And there was also some frog one that had a wand.
Yes, the Loveland frog who pulled out the sparkler out of thin air and shot it.
Yeah, okay. These are like, I could almost buy like Sasquatch. I mean, I know Jack has some deep beliefs about that. I don't go that far, but I could almost believe that there was one. Maybe there could still be one. I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't say no. Mothman, I already know that there's a Mothman because he's sitting right in that studio.
Oh,
Count Panic, you're the Mothman?
Let's do a zoom in on the
oh,
Mothman.
Oh,
right
my
there.
Word. Cut it out.
Zoom in.
Thanks, Pat. All of my, yeah, just keep zooming in on that face there, Colin. Oh, my God.
It's Mothman right there.
The Mothman. And, Pat, you have famously called me the Mothman so many times that people now believe that I am
yeah.
the Mothman.
I love it when people joke around with me that you're the Mothman, and they don't realize that it came from my mouth.
Oh, my goodness. Now, Pat, usually at the end of the show, I make my guests give a quip or some sort of piece of advice, but because you're one of the funniest people I know, I'm going to ask you to tell a joke.
Okay. That's kind of hard for me because jokes don't just come like that. But, so this is going to be really bad. Where does a general keep his armies?
Where?
Up his sleeveys.
Oh, I get it, Pop. That's a good one.
I mean, I am the age of a father, so I do tell dad jokes. So
not bad. Not bad at all.
Oh, folks, on that note, Count, do you have any closing words for the audience this evening?
Bob, I'm not going to top that one. Everybody just have a great night and, you know, enjoy the weather's warming up, but go out and enjoy it, Bob.
Yes.
Thanks to Pat for coming on.
Yes, thanks, yeah. Pat. Folks, thanks for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. On behalf of me and Count Panic, we just want to wish all of you sweet dreams. To my mom, good night. To my dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're happy, comfortable doing whatever it is that you want to be doing. And if no matter where you are in the world, I hope you have the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. Remember, the 2 most important rules of Bob After Dark are not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Eat fresh cheese bags.
Memoriam Development.